It's Thursday, July 30th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, Afghanistan's Taliban leader is apparently dead, reportedly, for 2 years. The nuclear deal with Iran is challenged in the U.S. Congress.
This is an American from Minnesota, Minneapolis. It's very difficult to say much about him, but the information we have got so far is that he seems to have committed similar crimes elsewhere.
A beloved lion is slain in Zimbabwe. Also ahead, a ban lifted by the Boy Scouts of America, and a singing contest winner has a new song. It's all on today's International Edition. Afghan government officials said Wednesday that reclusive Taliban chief Mullah Omar is dead and that he died more than 2 years ago in Pakistan. President Ashraf Ghani's office said Omar was very sick and died in 2013, but the Taliban itself claimed that Omar is still alive. Here in Washington, the White House said the reports of Omar's death appeared credible and that U.S. intelligence authorities are looking into the circumstances of his death. It is unclear why news of Omar's death was just now emerging, although there have been other reports of his death since 2001, the last time that the one-eyed secretive head of the Taliban was seen in public after U.S.-led forces toppled his government and he fled over the Afghan border into Pakistan. The death of Mullah Omar, a close ally of the al-Qaeda terror network, could complicate or even scuttle a second round of peace talks that are set to begin Friday between the Taliban and the Afghan government. Ayaz Gul in Islamabad tells International Edition host Susan Yaki the Taliban may face an internal power struggle.
Obviously, this is a big blow. If these reports are true, and if the Taliban at any point in time after this presidential statement also confirms that its leader is dead, then this is going to damage the entire peace process that has just been started like maybe 3 weeks ago. And this second round of negotiations, which was due in Pakistan and which is, as of this moment, confirmed to take place near Islamabad on Friday. Sources close to this whole process here in Islamabad say that if Mullah Omar's the reports of Mullah Omar's death are true, then there will be the purpose of these negotiations will also be dead, because on the table, whichever Taliban leaders will be sitting talking to the Afghan delegation will have no unified leadership after Mullah Omar's death, and it could really lead to serious disintegration within the Taliban ranks, and there could be a serious infighting for who is going to lead the Islamic movement after the death of Mullah Omar.
Do we know why all this news is coming out now?
Well, that's the question everybody is raising, that if the Afghan intelligence knew that Mullah Omar died 2 years ago in Pakistan, why were they sitting on this information for 2 years and waiting for a moment when there's a lot of hope in the region that as a result of this nascent Afghan peace process, there could be peace in Afghanistan? And the importance of these negotiations could be gauged from the fact that Chinese and American officials are also sitting as observers on the table when the two sides are negotiating. And for this round of negotiation, which is due on Friday, American and Chinese observers are also coming to participate. And as Daniel Feldman, the special representative, the special U.S. representative for Afghanistan and Pakistan, he was in Islamabad today and he spoke to a group of reporters. And he was quite hopeful that this process where the U.S. officials will be sitting as observers could lead to peace in Afghanistan. So there's a lot of hope and optimism that this Afghan peace process could lead to end of hostilities in Afghanistan. But with this news of the Taliban's leader Mullah Omar being dead, obviously it's a major setback for this whole effort in which Pakistan, the United States, China, and other allies of Afghanistan are playing a role to promote peace in Afghanistan. This process will seriously suffer if the Taliban now confirms that Mullah Omar is dead.
Mullah Omar led the Taliban when U.S. forces invaded Afghanistan in 2001 after the September 11th terrorist attacks against the United States. The Taliban supported al-Qaeda and sheltered its leader at the time, Osama bin Laden, who took credit for planning the attack by hijacking airliners that killed nearly 3,000 people in the United States. Omar had been the supreme commander and spiritual leader of Afghanistan since 1996, and after fleeing into Pakistan, he dropped out of sight after the U.S. invasion that followed those 2001 attacks on New York and Washington. Well, let's find out how social media are reacting to the apparent death of Mullah Omar. Michael Lippin is here in the studio. Michael, hello.
Hey, and, Jen.
You have some details. What's the big hashtag on Twitter?
Okay, well, I'll tell you. The big hashtag is Mullah Omar. You know, that hashtag has been tweeted at least 9,000 times in the past day, according to the Topsy Analytics website. And I've even seen the hashtag Mullah Omar dead. But is he really? Well, we haven't yet had confirmation or proof of his death from the Pakistani side, and some media outlets have picked up on that uncertainty. U.S. news site The Daily Beast tweeted this headline to one of its reports, "Mullah Omar dead again," and then it wrote in this in parentheses, "for the third time, in case you weren't counting." So, you know, The Daily Beast article is actually titled, "Rumors of Mullah Omar's death have been greatly exaggerated before." And the article quotes terrorism expert Thomas Jocelyn as pointing out that the Taliban has routinely released statements attributed to Omar each year, including just recently. And the article notes that Jocelyn said, "I doubt the Taliban has been pretending that he has been alive. There are just too many people who they would have to keep quiet."
Good point. If Omar's death is really true, what have other experts been saying about what that could mean for the region?
Well, you know, one prediction that's getting some attention comes from the Washington-based analyst Michael Kugelman at the Wilson Center. His handle is at Michael Kugelman, and he sent out a tweet saying that he believes Mullah Omar's death provides the Islamic State Group, or ISIS, with its biggest recruitment tool to date in Afghanistan. Kugelman also included a link to his latest blog for the Wall Street Journal, where he elaborates on that prediction about ISIS potentially filling a vacuum left by the Taliban. Now, other commentators have been highlighting the timing of the news of Omar's apparent death. Pakistani education activist Musharraf Zaidi, whose handle is at Musharraf Zaidi, said this, "News of Mullah Omar's death is big for sure, but the bigger story here is the leak's timing, 48 hours before the Afghan government and the Taliban meet to discuss peace terms." Jim?
Well, quite a lot of intrigue going on there, and you can follow all the latest developments, of course, at voanews.com, but also on Twitter with Michael. He is at Michael_Lippin.
That's me.
This is VOA.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
The news never stops. So keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This is VOA's International Edition. U.S. lawmakers are continuing to question and hear testimony from senior officials as they evaluate the international nuclear agreement with Iran. Congress has a 60-day period to review the Iran nuclear agreement, and committees in both the House and Senate have been questioning senior members of President Barack Obama's cabinet. Secretary of State John Kerry told the House Foreign Affairs Committee Tuesday that a U.S. rejection of the pact would be squandering the best chance to control Iran's nuclear program and would leave no restraints on Iran developing a nuclear weapon.
If you walk away, year 15 or 20 starts tomorrow. and without any of the long-term access and verification safeguards that we have put in place. What is the alternative? What are you going to do when Iran does start to enrich, which they will feel they have a right to if we walk away from the deal?
The agreement between Iran and a group that includes the United States, Britain, China, France, Russia, and Germany restrains the Iranian nuclear program in exchange for lifting United Nations and Western sanctions that have hurt the country's economy. It came after months of negotiations and has been followed by continued engagement between Iranian officials and those from the so-called P5 plus one. The United Nations Security Council approved the terms of the deal last week, and that set off a timetable that could see sanctions lifted by the end of the year. Congressman Ed Royce is the Republican chairman of the Foreign Affairs panel. He said it's backwards and wrong that the UN voted on the pact before the U.S. Congress completes its review, and he also voiced skepticism about the agreement itself.
If this agreement goes through, Iran gets a cash bonanza, a boost to its international standing, and a lighted path toward nuclear weapons. With sweeping sanctions relief, we have lessened our ability to challenge Iran's conduct across the board. As Iran grows stronger, we will be weaker to respond.
Well, it's not just members of the Republican-controlled Congress. The lead Democrat on the committee is Congressman Elliot Engel. He said there are a number of issues that he finds troublesome about the deal. President Barack Obama has vowed to veto any congressional rejection measure, and that means both the House and Senate would need to muster two-thirds majorities to override the president and refuse to lift congressionally imposed sanctions. Those sanctions, along with the ones put in place by the United Nations and EU, came in response to allegations that Iran was using its nuclear technology to pursue nuclear weapons. Iran has denied those allegations and insisted that the nuclear program it is conducting is peaceful. It sought sanctions repeal as the main element of the agreement that limits its enrichment activity and subjects its nuclear sites to enhanced UN monitoring. A Zimbabwe man has been released on bail after he was charged with assisting an American who killed one of the country's most beloved lions. We hear more now from Sebastian Mofu from Harare for VOA.
Animal lovers in Zimbabwe and elsewhere are in an uproar over the killing of a 13-year-old lion named Cecil. The lion was known to be friendly to humans and helped bring tourists to Zimbabwe's Hwange National Park. Researchers at Oxford University in Great Britain were using him in a study. But that all came to an end when Sisu was shot dead early this month by a visiting U.S. citizen named Walter Palmer. Zimbabwean authorities have now charged a professional hunter, Theo Bronkhorst, with helping Palmer to kill the popular lion. They say he accepted $55,000 to lure Siso out of the park, enabling Palmer to first shoot him with a bow and arrow and then finish him off with a gun. Bronkhorst was freed on bail Wednesday after appearing in a courtroom in Hwange, about 700 kilometers west of the capital, Harare. A second Zimbabwean initially accused of helping Palmer, Honest Ndlovu, was not charged and may appear as a state witness when Bronkhorst goes on trial next week. Emmanuel Fundira, who heads the Safari Operators Association of Zimbabwe, wants to know the whereabouts of Palmer, who has since left the country.
I'm not sure exactly where he is at the moment, but he's an American from Minnesota, Minneapolis. It's very difficult to say much about him, but the information we have got so far is that he seems to have committed similar crimes elsewhere.
Palmer, a dentist from the U.S. state of Minnesota, has since acknowledged killing Cecil, but he said he believed the hunt was illegal and the necessary permits had been secured. In Zimbabwe, poaching crimes are rampant, and conservation groups say President Robert Mugabe's government needs to step up efforts to combat the poachers. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's weekly newsmaker interview program. Listeners around the globe get insights from authors, analysts, and policymakers on a wide range of topics, from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
The Boy Scouts of America has lifted its ban on openly gay adult leaders and employees, but local Boy Scout units chartered by religious organizations still will be permitted to exclude gay adults from serving as unit leaders, scoutmasters, or camp counselors. About two-thirds of the 100,000-plus Boy Scout units nationwide are linked to religious institutions. VOA's Lonica Hoke tells us the rest are chartered to civic groups and educational organizations.
The decision announced Monday is seen as an effort to increase the Boy Scouts' declining membership and avoid litigation with gay advocates while appeasing religious sponsors.
For far too long, this issue has divided and distracted us. Now it's time to unite behind our shared belief in the extraordinary power of scouting to be a force for good.
But some Christian organizations promptly criticized the decision.
Remember, it was just a few years ago that the Boy Scouts were forced to release 14,000 pages of documents, the so-called perversion files, that detailed thousands of sexual assault cases of troop leaders against Boy Scouts.
The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the largest of all faith-based Boy Scout sponsors, issued a statement saying that the Mormons' century-long association with scouting will need to be examined. Some religious groups are recommending that families send their boys to alternative scout organizations. But many parents believe the 105-year-old Texas-based organization is doing the right thing.
You're taught to be honest, you're taught to be trustworthy, you're taught to be generous, caring. Discrimination is none of those things.
The new policy is effective immediately. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
She won the voice singing competition here in the United States under Coach Blake Shelton, and now Cassidy Pope has a new single that is inspiring people everywhere. International Edition's David Byrd spoke with Country Hits USA host Nikki Strong about Pope's tune, I Am Invincible.
If you're a fan of the U.S. TV show The Voice, you know who Cassidy Pope is. You know she was the first female winner of that competition, and you know this girl can sing. Nikki, she's got a new tune out now, and it's called...
I Am Invincible.
All right.
Yes, it is a self-empowerment theme built to last, make it through to the end, sort of like Katy Perry's Raw.
Right.
And Rachel Platten's Fight Song, which is popular now, too. And she debuted the song at the Special Olympics, which I think was fantastic and appropriate. And it has already, upon its premiere, has climbed to number 4 on the real-time Billboard and Twitter trending 140.
Uh-oh.
So this is good news for her.
Uh-oh.
Now, in it, she talks about, now, she didn't write the song, but she says it resonated with her for several reasons. She's been writing a lot, and she's been under a lot of pressure to craft a hit for her sophomore project. But this song, because it combined her love for rock and her country roots, and lyrically it resonated with her, she said it just felt very inspiring and empowering. And the song indeed is that.
I'm invincible. I'm unbreakable. I'm a diamond cut to less. I'm unstoppable. I'm a hero. Like a phoenix from the ash.
Invincible.
And it's, you know, it's kind of like one of those songs like Whitney Houston's One Moment in Time.
Yes.
That was associated with the Olympics.
Yes.
And, you know, you see people overcoming adversity in the Special Olympics and being invincible, you know, that's great. I mean, I can just picture it in my head, you know, somebody crossing the finish line of a race.
Yes, yes, and saying, I am invincible. I know the words are talking about, I'm unbreakable, I'm a diamond cut to last, I'm unstoppable, I'm a hero like a phoenix from the ash.
Wow.
Yeah.
I give you goosebumps just listening to it. Wow. Now, you mentioned this is her sophomore project. She was on, as we said, Team Blake for The Voice.
Yes, she was.
And she won.
And she won.
And so she's kind of got a guardian angel in Blake Shelton, too, right?
And he has encouraged her. He said, you know, you're a different kind of country artist because of her rock influences. And he said, but be true to yourself. And she's endeavoring to do that for this project. She said she has been writing with so many people. I know she's written with Kit Moore. She's worked with Nathan Chapman. She's worked with Lady A's or Lady Antebellum Charles Kelly. She has a surplus of material, but she's really trying to narrow it down to the songs that really represent who she is.
Thanks a lot, Nikki. If you would like to send Nikki a tweet, you can do that at @VOA_music. You can send us one at @VOA_IE. You can also listen for Country Hits USA. That's Nikki's show. Dial that up on our website. That's www.voanews.com.
Invincible.
You've been listening to International Edition. I know a couple other people who are invincible. Director Tracy Carter and our engineer Aydin Utku. You know what? You're invincible too. Thanks for joining us today. And we hope you come back. You can find us always at voanews.com. We're also on Facebook at VOA Asia, Twitter, VOA_IE. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Burundi's controversial presidential election is over, but the political crisis there continues following the National Electoral Commission's announcement that President Pierre Nkurunziza has won with over 69% of the vote. The balloting and electoral process have been broadly criticized as non-credible by the East African community and international partners, including President Obama during his recent visit to Kenya. The election, which was boycotted by opposition parties in protest of President Nkurunziza's intent to run for a third term, and the government's efforts to close media outlets and shut down political space, leaves the East African nation divided and in the throes of continued political turmoil. Many have criticized the government for violating democratic norms and for going forward with the voting despite the clear absence of conditions necessary for credible elections. The opposition says the president's re-election bid violated the Arusha Agreement, which ended Burundi's devastating civil war and remains the bedrock of the country's fragile stability. Major donors have suspended assistance and threatened to impose sanctions in response to the discredited electoral process and to hold accountable those responsible for human rights abuses. The commission's announcement on the electoral results culminates a deeply flawed electoral process, one marked by violence and a disregard for the civil and human rights of the citizens of Burundi. The United States is deeply disappointed by President Nkurunziza's violation of the Arusha Agreement and use of undemocratic means to maintain power through an electoral process that was neither credible nor legitimate. Moving forward, it is imperative that the government of Burundi re-engage in a meaningful, serious dialogue with opposition and civil society leaders to reach a consensus on how Burundi may regain the trust and confidence of its citizens and the international community and prevent even greater instability, economic collapse, refugee flows, and violence.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.